Movie Mavericks.
The Movie Mavericks Podcast.
Movie Mavericks, speaking of fucking long, uncut European cocks.
The Movie Mavericks Podcast.
Now for your hosts, Jason and Trevor.
I can't wait.
Hey now, everybody. Welcome to episode 303 of the Movie Mavericks Podcast. I'm Trevor Anderson. I'm sending you over to Jason Rugard. He's got a rundown for us.
On tonight's episode, we'll be doing a trivia question involving Steven Spielberg. We'll be talking about 8 new films out in theaters right now and available on streaming, 5 trailers for future upcoming films, a streaming online pick, and of course, a couple of topics that we'll be discussing, as well as the death of Anton Yelchin, the young actor that tragically passed away last week. Got that and a lot of other topics to go over tonight, so stay with us. We're going to be doing this on episode 303, as Trevor said there. And we haven't done this in a while, huh? We've taken a couple weeks off there.
It's been a while.
Yeah.
It's been a little bit.
You know what? We had the Davi debacle, I'll say. And we had left our viewers or our listeners out there with the last episode. And I'll just let you know that we reached out to Mr. Davi and had a conversation.
I'm sure a lot of people were really worried that he had somehow put a hit out on you. He got to you, you know?
They've seen enough movies to know that my life may have been in danger, Sanchez. And it was, we talked to him in email. All is made up and forgiven, apparently, between us. We invited him on the show. He did agree to come on, but our scheduling has been very off with him, and we have not been able to get something going. I guess he's on tour right now doing a Sinatra. The greatest hits thing. And I actually watched his videos on YouTube. Did you watch any of his singing? Did you see any of this?
No.
He does a hell of a Sinatra impersonation. I was fucking highly impressed. I'm not just saying this because we had beef and now we're cool. You know what I mean? I said it straight up. Good or bad, I mean, I would tell you. He did a good Sinatra impersonation. I was fucking impressed.
So basically what you're calling him is a Sinatra
impersonator.
You're putting your foot in your mouth again, man.
Ow. Man, well, he's got a beautiful fucking voice. I'll say that man sings like a beautiful angel. All right, let's move on and talk about the trivia before I dig myself deeper. All right, I think you might get this trivia question because we may have discussed this earlier. But for those that there aren't going to know.
What's the only one? It's actually the only answer.
Steven Spielberg action comedy was originally intended as a musical before it was decided to be a straight action comedy, which I think it is.
Have you actually asked this before?
I don't think so, no.
No? Okay. Well, I'll say 1941, because that's what it is, and I mean, I think it's pretty obvious, isn't it?
Right. Now, is that because it's
what
the
else
only
could it be?
Comedy that he's attempted? Action comedy? I'd say Hook is an action comedy, wouldn't you?
I would, but, I mean, I guess that's possible. That could have been a musical, but I don't know. I think that musical is called Peter Pan.
I watched 1941 just recently, and it struck me when I rewatched it how much of a wannabe John Landis film it is. It's almost like he's trying to do it.
Landis
House.
Is heavily involved, isn't he?
Well, Landis has a cameo at one point, so maybe he is, because there is a lot of the Animal House alumni in there, cast in roles throughout it. So it's very possible. But I just loved in the research of that film, I came across that Kubrick told Spielberg that it was good, but it was not funny at all. You know, and he thought he should market it as a drama rather than a comedy. And I thought, what a dick that Kubrick was. All right. Let's move on and talk about something. This is kind of interesting here. Lyft, the promotional ride company. You ever use Lyft or Uber? Have you used one of these yet?
No. I just use Grindr. That's the same thing, right?
My goodness. You are getting a different kind of ride.
That's the same thing, right? Yeah. Yeah.
Well, your ride comes with a doctor's visit. This ride comes in the Ghostbusters Echo One. And if you don't know what that is, you're probably not a fucking nerd. And it's the Ghostbusters Cadillac hearse that they drive around in, basically the Ghostbusters car. And this will be appearing.
Yeah, the Echo One. Everyone knows.
I had this as a toy. Remember they sold these as toys?
Yeah, and then the helicopter.
Yes.
Was that the Ecto 2? I mean, which one? What was the Ecto 2? Or was
it was
that
almost like the Batwing and shit like that?
Well, there's
a
motorcycle.
Wow, man, you're hitting memory caps now. There was.
Those are like toys and shit, though. Yeah, obviously. I mean, cartoon and stuff.
Off the cartoon.
Yeah.
Which is not the. It was their Ghostbusters and the real Ghostbusters, because there was that shitty.
Right, but the real ghost. Right, but
the real
Ghostbusters is
the good one.
I don't know. I think that one isn't that the newer one. I mean, there was a really new one that I didn't watch, which may have been the real Ghostbusters. But I watched whatever the hell one was on in the 90s.
I watched them in the 80s. So yeah, maybe you watched the younger version there. Maybe you saw the real Ghostbusters, and I saw the initial one. It's like Backstreet.
I don't know.
Regardless, you can get picked up if you're using Lyft's promotional ride service this weekend in cities like Boston, New York, and San Francisco. There will be an Ecto-1 cruising around, and when you use the service, you may get picked up in the Ecto-1 and drive around.
No, see, the real Ghostbusters is the good one.
That's what I said.
And from you said, yeah, but you said it was the second one. Well, it was the first one. It was from 86 to 91.
There was one called Ghostbusters that was absolutely dog shit.
But there was a newer one, I think, one that came after this that was shitty.
We're talking about the space-time continuum. I don't even think Doc Brown could keep this timeline.
I don't know. Well, I did try to rewatch something, one of these things, and it was really bad. And I think it was the new one, and I couldn't watch it. But I do remember really loving the fucking Ghostbusters cartoon when I was a kid.
Oh, it's like the Ninja Turtles. I tried to rewatch one of those. Oh,
those were so good, too.
No, man, try to watch one of those and like brain comes on.
I know. I've tried to watch so much TV that I used to watch as a kid. It's so bad.
We didn't know. We didn't know any better. Okay, we still drink whole milk. All right, let's talk about Anton Yelchin. This is was really the promising young actor that was in a lot of films that you and I both liked. Most notably, I think Alpha Dog comes to mind. Odd Thomas, of course, Star Trek, which is being heavily promoted.
Fright Night.
Yeah, Fright Night, which he was probably the best part of that.
But he's just in a ton of crap, really.
What was the one he was in a couple years back that I liked? It was kind of a knockoff on the 500 Days of Summer. I can't think of the name of it right now, but it was very much in that vein. And like Still Young or Still Loving You or something rather like that. My goodness, I'm having an aneurysm on air. But
I don't know.
Regardless, this kid tragically passed away after being pinned by his car to a brick wall. And it just, you asked me when I had talked to you about this initially, you said to me, do you think this will make Star Trek bigger? Do you think it'll give it that Ledger kind of bump? And I don't think it will, because he's not that level of a star. But I do think that there is some sort of weird morbid curiosity about it, especially with the new trailer they just dropped with the Rihanna song in there. That's like slow and kind of dedicated to him. And have you seen this new final trailer they just dropped?
I haven't watched that trailer yet. I was saving it a little bit. I mean, this is one of the movies that I really want to go see. I loved this cast. I thought it was perfect casting. And, you know, I mean, talk about someone that you could just tell. And you know, even the Star Trek, you know, this wasn't that role for him yet. Like, there was a role coming up somewhere for him that I think would have been that crossover role where everyone would have been like, oh, yeah, this guy's awesome, you know, because he really was that good.
Yeah, I don't know why he didn't work even more. It's one of those things, you know, especially when you have the Miles Teller of the world running around and the Hemsworths and, you know, all these kind of guys. And he could have been in a lot of things. But you're right. I don't think he ever found his true mark. But
what, like four movies coming out this year that he's in?
I'll always think of him in that scene in Alpha Dog when he realizes what they plan to do with him, you know, when he finally cracks. And that's when I remember seeing that when he was younger and just thinking like, because he looks so young in that movie. He almost looked like an Elijah Wood.
Well, he was supposed to be. But he's a small person anyways, kind of, isn't he? He kind of is able to play those young roles still. Even at how early is he? 28, I think.
Yeah, it was very young. It surprised me how young he was, in fact, because he actually looked a little bit older in the photos I saw of him recently. But
he can.
I guess because he was trying to look older for roles. But
yes.
But I recommend people to go back and maybe check out Odd Thomas, which I know both you and I recommend. And I don't
Odd
think
Thomas
many people
is great.
Did catch. And it was directed by Steven Sommers, who did the Mummy movies and G.I. Joe. And it does have a blockbuster
really
type
it,
feel
yeah.
to it. And he is good in it.
One of the only reasons I liked Fright Night at all was Anton Yelchin.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And I'd even put the movie Odd Thomas in the same grouping of The Frighteners, kind of that horror comedy-esque kind of vibe. All right. Well, Roland Emmerich this weekend suffered a fatality at the box office there with ID4. In fact, I want to talk about that for a second.
Everyone hate that movie?
Is there a Hemsworth curse?
Yeah, right? At this point.
I can't think of another brother acting duo that's been out at the same time that looked that similar, that has done this poorly and yet continues to get fucking cast in things. What is going on here? Seriously, what is a brother acting duo? I mean, Don Swayze, Frank Stallone, and Joey Travolta must be pissed somewhere going, we never got our shot, but they're giving this prick his? What's going on here, man? These guys are in everything right now, and none of it is any good.
Yeah, I mean, I'm still gonna have to go see this. I don't know. Have you seen it yet?
No.
Yeah. Like,
I mean, the thing is, how sad this is to me. Because this movie, ID4, sold 6 million fewer tickets than the original did on its opening weekend. That is, first of all, why is this not opening up on July 4th? To me, this is a July 4th movie.
It's like the worst fucking, yeah.
That's a flub right there, in my opinion.
So it's a week too early,
at least. What the fuck are we doing without the original cast? You don't make a sequel to something 20 years later and not get at least an original cast member. Give me Randy Quaid at the very least. I know he's free.
Well, they have original cast members in this.
Get Bill Pullman and Brett Spinner. You're gonna fucking
sell Data's them that. Awesome.
Data is awesome.
What's his name was also in this. Jeff Goldblum's in this too.
Oh, okay, yeah, that helped Lost World become a good movie. I mean,
All you want. Who you're really looking for is Will Smith, right? I mean, that's the name that you're looking for. So don't blame them for not getting the other people because they did. What they tried to do, they tried to give you Liam Hemsworth.
They didn't want to give you $50 million for two movies. They didn't.
You're not going to buy Liam Hemsworth instead of Will Smith.
No,
I'm sure. At this point, Will Smith probably seems to be paying attention to actually the source material, you know, that he's going to be making into a movie. And I'm sure the script was fucking terrible.
Yeah, I've heard nothing but bad things about this. And I'm big...
Me too, but I expect
Independence Day is a perennial favorite in my house. We watch that almost every July 4th. You didn't put it on in the background.
How can you make it through it? It's a terrible fucking
movie. Well, that's why you put it on in the background.
I mean, I'm sure this is equally as terrible, but it was still... It still should at least be fun in the theater, I would hope. But I guess not. Apparently not.
It's just nothing special. I mean, you have to admit the marketing for this looked very interchangeable with many other things.
Yeah, at this point, maybe. I mean, it's just too little, too late.
Unfortunately. Or too much Hemsworth.
Or, I mean, the better thing to do would have been just to have a small run of something on Sci-Fi Channel. No, I'm honestly at this point, what that probably would have been a little bit better.
They might 10 lose years money. Ago, you can catch Will Smith still at a reasonable rate, and it's still a massive success.
10 years ago,
and I think that they dropped the ball by waiting too long and waiting till their
they
star
shouldn't have waited
evolved.
10 years ago though. They should have done it much sooner than that.
Well, Emmerich ran off and did Godzilla after he got the clout of Independence Day, and going back and rewatching the original Godzilla is it's terrible, that movie, but it's still so much better than the 2014 version.
But isn't that what happened? Is it? It's not any better than the 2014 version.
I prefer it to it.
You can prefer it all you want. It's a fucking terrible movie. I've seen it recently as well. I mean, Matthew Broderick walks around.
He's so bad.
It's terrible. It's a terrible fucking movie, man. It steals from Jurassic Park. It is just absolutely one of the worst fucking movies I've ever seen.
Oh, they steal from everybody. I mean, if you watch Independence Day, that's stolen from the original V.
But this is what I'm saying. Roland Emmerich, I mean, I think the reason it's taken so long for him to make a comeback is because people had to forget how fucking terrible he was, right? I mean, honestly.
I've always had an affinity for his films. Even White House Down is a guilty pleasure for me.
That one's good. I mean, I did like that better than the other.
I kind of liked the stupid before BC 10,000 or 10,000 BC or whatever it was.
He's a terrible filmmaker, you know?
Let's not talk about tastes.
He doesn't have blockbuster taste. He has a blockbuster taste of here's the poster and the idea. When you see the movie, it's ooey bowl.
It's very Corman-esque, and I like that about the dude. He's selling
But he
concepts.
Shouldn't be making big-budget movies, right? It shouldn't be a $165 million movie.
Well, it's going to continue because now Universal has greenlit his next film, which is Moonfall, about the moon falling to Earth, and it's going to be a disaster film, and it's coming out in 2019. So
but
he
that,
has
and
sold
that might
another
be fine.
Concept to poster.
Well, then that might be fine because when you see what other people have done with movies like that, you know, it doesn't take much.
Well, disaster films are in his wheelhouse, and they're always a good place for disaster films. But we right now are in a strange.
I mean, those don't matter. Those are only big special effects movies, right? I mean, the story in disaster films is just secondary. It's just some like family story almost, right?
I will say this about Independence Day 2, that the best thing that I see that it has going for it is a 119-minute running time, and I think that is just glorious.
That's even
because I am so fucking tired. of being in a theater for 2.5+, you know, and just watching special effects. I mean, I really, once again, have to say on air, I cannot, filmmakers, trim your fucking movies. X-Men at 2 hours and 25 minutes. Are you kidding me? The 8th X-Men movie needs to be the longest?
It was really important.
It's
they had some things they really had to say.
There was a time, including like when the original Independence Day came out and things of that nature, when CGI sequences came on and it wowed me. But around Transformers 2, I really stopped being wowed at a city being destroyed and all this kind of CGI destruction. And now it's so old hat that I honestly start thinking about if the meter has enough money in it, if what I need to get at the grocery store. I mean, my mind wanders in these sequences, and I lose touch with what's even happening on screen. I'm going to do a compare at the end of the summer. I'm going to compare the running times from the movies of the top 10 movies of 1996 and the top 10 movies of the summer of 2016 and the running time. And I'm telling you, the average movie has got to be 25 minutes longer. It has to be. So thank you, part two of this, for not being 2 hours and 25 minutes is what I'm trying to say.
That just tells you how bad it was. Could you imagine the 2.5 hour original cut?
Oh no, you know, the
people probably killed themselves. Yeah, people were killing themselves. They had to cut it down.
That's basically a sci-fi movie then, you know, like a sci-fi channel movie that they just added a shitload of CGI to make a feature length.
I'm sorry, that's every Roland Emmerich movie, right? I mean, I heard he wants to reboot Stargate, or someone's rebooting Stargate, right?
I think every Roland Emmerich movie has been mockbustered by the Asylum. I think that might be a fucking record, honestly.
Well, yeah, because that's what they are. They're sci-fi, or, you know, movies that have hundreds of millions of dollars spent on them.
My God, that might be a fucking record. He holds the record for something. That might be a trivia question coming up sometime. You know, HBO canceled Vinyl, their second season of it, even after they greenlit it. And there's been a change at the head of production at HBO, who basically said, let's get this thing off. It didn't do good numbers. It was only doing like 600,000 per episode. Did you get into Vinyl at all? You watching this?
Nope. Never watched it.
I watched the pilot and halfway through a second episode, and it just was not my cup of tea. And some people dug it. Most people I talked to really were against it. And for an expensive show, they spent $100 million in the first season, all in with the music, production, everyone getting paid out, and the marketing of that show. So that is a huge, huge cancellation for HBO. I think it was supposed to be their next big hit on the level of Game of Thrones and things like that. And I don't know. HBO has had some real clunkers like this. It reminded me of when they canceled Lucky, which I was really getting into before they, you know, unfortunately had to cancel that after the death of two horses. But some of these above the – I don't know. When an HBO show flounders, they don't let it hang around. I mean, the Leftovers –
well, they don't have the money.
The Leftovers is barely hanging on. I don't know who's watching that, but it's
– yeah, they just kill stuff. I mean, I am excited to hear, you know, word of a Dead Word movie that will be only on HBO, obviously. I'm not going to put it in theaters, but, you know, it's exciting that HBO, if something does get canceled, you know, it has a possibility of being brought back.
And then we have a secondary life.
Yeah, kind of, right? It's not really bringing back this show, but they're gonna tie it up for you at least.
It's a good way to get some ratings in, and that's something that they used to do with series, you know, like Hercules. Remember back that they would do like a 2-hour movie before and the season was over to kind of continue it, and it's a very 90s ploy to get your viewers and fan base in.
They did too.
That was a very big
talking
90s
about Kevin
movie.
Sorbo shit.
You bringing up Kevin Sorbo shit? That's old shit.
What the hell? Remember them Hercules movies? The Hercules show. They used to play them movies.
I remember them.
They were 90-minute episodes. All they were was two episodes. They played back to back. They're like, it's a movie.
They added another commercial break and made it 2 hours.
This is a movie, guys.
Before we had DVRs, we were tricked into watching the whole fucking thing.
We were tricked into it.
We were tricked.
Well, I started it.
Let's take a quick commercial break and we'll come back with 8 movie reviews.
This podcast is a proud member of the LAM Podcasting Network. Find the network at largeassmovieblogs.com.
If you like intelligent and smart movie discussion,
Face is a zombie movie.
How did he write a book if he doesn't have an arm?
Or want to hear the latest news on your favorite actor?
Talk some Julianne Moore, I guess.
Whales have more films than Zoe Saldana.
Then check out The Lambcast, where no question is too risque. Rachel, do you have a MILF?
Check out the Lambcast, the official podcast of the Lamb, the large association of movie blogs, which can be found at largeassmovieblogs.blogspot.com. Si habla español.
Hola y bienvenido a la
Lambcast. I don't know.
All right. Okay. Let's move on and talk about some films that we have seen, because you and I have seen some movies.
Some shit that we've seen.
And let's talk about ones we've seen.
Both seen first. That's what we're talking about. Ones we've seen.
Ones we've seen. That's ones we've heard about.
Let's go ahead and start with the ones we've seen.
You heard about this thing? Let's talk about Dirty Grandpa off the bat, because you just watched that. I saw it recently. And what'd you think?
Yeah, you said...
I gave it a mild recommendation.
I'm gonna be in the same boat as you. It's a terrible movie, but it's interestingly bad. You know, it's, and the best way to describe it is someone wrote somewhere, there's a script of this that is a normal movie, you know, and all those elements are kind of in there, but then it feels like someone came along and just fucked the whole thing up. You know, there's like, fuck that, we're gonna shoot this day, and we're gonna make
make it raunchy.
It happens, like, the universe that this takes place in is just one of the weirdest fucking universes I've ever seen. And this guy it's basically the anger management, right, is the plot device here. You have a pussy, a guy who's been pussified by everyone around him, and you have a grandfather who notices it and decides, I'm going to wake this guy up. So he acts like an asshole the whole time, just to get a rise out of him. Of course,
that it's still in him.
Of course, in doing that, by the end of the movie, he has just beaten over his pussy grandson to be the person he wants him to be. And he's still no one to himself or anyone else, right?
Yeah, to know aid of himself.
Yeah, exactly. And there's something. There's an interesting review of Lars and the Real Girl by Roger Ebert, where he talks about this kind of stuff. It's a review that stuck with me because it's one of those, in so many movies, there's these people who see other people and they have these problems with them, and they want to change them. And this is very similar to Lars and the Real Girl, where the grandpa sees this kid and he's like, I want to change him. You know, he's not doing it right in my mind. And so they go and they change him, and somehow it's presented in a way that's a good thing, right? Like they change this guy, but it's only changed to what this guy thought was good and should be right. You know, it was never a decision of the actual grandson, or you know, it doesn't make any sense, right? It's really just something that I wish that.
It's a shit
movie. People who
movie,
write movies would stop doing.
At the
doing.
Same time, it's got moments that are very funny. I laughed a couple of times.
It's
very
funny, actually. Quite a bit of it. And because I think the interesting thing about this, we usually complain when people are dragged through the mud, you know, especially characters and things like that. But you really don't. There's no one beloved in this movie. You really just don't give a shit about these people. And so really taking the Zac Efron character and just beating the shit out of him actually is perfectly fine with me.
Yeah,
right? You know,
bucks,
and I'm sitting here laughing at him like, what a fucking moron, you know, but it's not.
And De Niro is probably funnier here than he's ever been on screen, in my opinion.
I mean, possibly. I think the repertoire with him and Aubrey, what's her name?
Yeah, no, I know the gal who's also in David Mike Need Wedding.
Oh, God. Yeah. Now I can't remember her name, but Aubrey, whatever. It's fucking hysterical, I thought, and some of the shit that she said to him, and he didn't back down and stuff, and you're just thinking, wow, you know. I mean, the thing that's interesting about this to me is Robert De Niro comes out with The Intern, and then comes out with this, you know, and they're such polar opposites, and both really the same movie. When it comes down to it, he's an old man helping out a younger person, right, and kind of steering them with his older, wise ways, you know, steering them through life. But just totally opposite.
I actually found this to be better than Neighbors 2, and when you see that, I want you to compare the two as well. Let's move on and talk about The Do-Over, the Adam Sandler movie that premiered on Netflix. I got a chance to catch up with this one, and I was very, very surprised. After the debacle, that was Ridiculous 6. I was very entertained at this, laughed a couple times, and really liked the Sandler character, and thought Spade was maybe at his most appealing that he's ever been on screen here. The jokes with him working in the bank and the shopping market worked, and the action worked here. I liked even the action bits. It does look like it's a second tier production in a lot of senses. The cinematography is a little off, maybe a little something's maybe a little off there.
It's just cheap at times, you know, is what it looks like. But which is fine. It's a straight-to-video movie, really, when you think about it. I would have been pissed had I seen this in theaters, had I paid a premium price for this. But this being free, technically, really through Netflix, it's fucking perfect. And it was fun, like you said.
It's exactly the kind of movie it needs to
be. I don't know. I'd give it such high remarks. I thought David Spade was... you know, obviously Tommy Boy and stuff, you know, I'm not going to say this is a high point of his, but
I find him in fucking great.
He's good.
Mostly.
Really?
And on this, yeah, I always have. And on this, he didn't bother me.
Well, I like David Spade, so, but it really worked for me. I thought they both played off each other really well, and it was good. You know, it was good to see just a kind of a shitty action comedy, you know, that didn't really need to have high expectations for it, you know.
I guess I'm just saying this reminds me of the kind of Adam Sandler movie that I like and not the Ridiculous Six, 90s. Which reminds me of the Adam Sandler movie that I hate, which is the 2000s Sandlers,
right.
You know, from that era, which
I
is
agree.
Just
I mean, this
very
feels
referential.
Like a very 90s movie.
Yeah. I mean, Bulletproof is one of his most underrated movies of his whole career, I thought. And this vaguely reminded me of that.
Yeah, it's not as nice, but yeah.
But Swartzen's in this. And, you know, every time I see Swartzen, I think about his one shot at movie stardom. And I caught it in theaters years ago. Bucky Larson,
Bucky
born to
Larson
be a star.
Shit? Oh,
and
God.
Fucking
that's
Bucky
the
Larson
worst,
is,
man.
No, man, Bucky Larson to me is like a hidden gem like Grandma's Boy.
You're out of your
asks
mind.
Me,
Bucky Larson's so fucking terrible.
Oh,
you're crazy.
Love Bucky
you
Larson,
love it?
Man. That and Grandma's Boy are like two
Grandma's
really
awesome.
Underrated.
Oh man!
Well, at least
and
we know
he's
where
really
we stand
funny.
The
Grandma's
Larson
Boy too.
You
Bucky
stand
Larson's
over there, sir.
Terrible.
Fuck off! I love Bucky Larson. You gotta love it. Come on! How do
nobody
you?
Nobody has to love it, and nobody does love it. You're the only person
like
out
Joe
there.
Dirt?
You could probably get the rights to Bucky Larson if you wanted to. Bad.
Swartzen got him himself for $28 on eBay.
Seriously.
All right, what do we got next here? How is Zootopia? Because I'll talk about Dory next. I want to know about Zootopia. Oh. This was the original hit of the year for Disney, the big animated movie from early this year.
Yeah, it was good. It was solid. It's just not great. You know, I really don't understand how it got such high praise from everyone because it's just a normal movie. I was really expecting it to be, I guess, just more, you know, and it's not. It's just kind of... It's a little too dumbed down for me, I guess. I don't know. It wasn't as fun of a ride as I was expecting.
Visually, it looks okay.
Yeah, visually, it's great. The voice talent is really strong. The animation's great. It's just that storyline's kind of like, nah, you know? I mean, especially when you get to the end and and everything is revealed. It's like, oh, really? Kind of weak.
Surprising.
I don't want to ruin it,
it's
but
it's a billion-dollar grocer. But you didn't.
That's what I thought too. I really thought
you didn't
it was
care for
be...
Frozen either, though. And you watched
Frozen's really for little children. I mean, let's be honest. Any adult who's like, "Oh, Frozen's really good," I gotta believe you have some sort of mental retardation because it's really for little children. You know, I'm joking, but you can still enjoy it. That at least Frozen has music, so I can understand people liking that about it. You know. Or adults liking that. This movie is Zootopia is better than Frozen. I'll say that. But I just wished, I don't know, with all the hubbub around it, I really thought, you know, it would have been more. I don't know. It's not a Pixar movie. You know, Pixar at least tries to do, even when they fail, and you know, in my mind, they have at least attempted to do something. This movie is very safe.
I mean, I got to go right into my review then of Finding Dory, because Finding Dory is very safe as well, but it is the Pixar touch. I mean, this thing works. And what's interesting about Finding Dory is that it's not like it's not an all-time classic from them, but it's a damn good movie from Pixar once again. And I feel like it's been a while since I take that back. Inside Out last year was, I thought, tremendous. But for a while there, their sequel game was not up to par. Toy Story 3 bucked that trend. But this Finding Dory, the first 20 minutes or so, I thought, man, where are we going with this? This kind of feels like they're hitting all the hallmarks of the first one. And then it goes into the Monterey Bay Aquarium, and we meet this escape-minded octopus voiced by Ed O'Neill, which is just spot on. This beluga whale by Ty Sheridan, or by Ty Burrell, you know, from Modern Family, and a couple of other people. And it's just, I mean, It's so fucking imaginative and good. And what you realize when you watch these Pixar movies is that the writers, long before they even do any of the visualization of this, are not lazy. They look at this world and they look at every mm-hmm. corner that they can be creative in it, whether it be the name of something, a character that they can visit, a location, and they just expand on the themes and all of the important things that you'd want them to. And it makes the sequel worthwhile and not just a cash grab. I'm highly impressed here. I mean, honestly, I understand now why it's making what it's making. Now, the central character of Dory, I think that's a bit that I was tired of, the absent-mindedness in the first film. And there is a non-discrimination kind of theme running throughout this for younger children, or really for anybody.
In an animated movie? No.
Obviously, you know, especially with her handicap there. But I don't think that she's the draw of this. I have always thought that the characters, really a lot of these Pixar movies, the side characters are more entertaining than the main character, like in Cars and things like that. Mm-hmm. So, but really, yeah.
I mean, even film. When you think about like, when I think about some of these Disney movies that are Disney alone, you know, even though Lasseter's at the helm, but not Pixar movies, a lot of them are very, very good, but not really. They're just not the same as the Pixar stuff still, even today. You know, the Pixar stuff is just...
It's the brand.
As you said, like, they really fill out that universe, and they do. Like, they make every single scene and every single moment somehow is interesting. Or at least you can see the wheels turning, and if it doesn't work for you, at least you can see that they're trying at something, and it obviously works for someone else, but... I guess that could be said about everything, but you know what I mean. There's something
crying,
going on above, you know.
A crying clam in this movie with a pearl in his mouth, longing for his long-lost Shelly, you know? I mean, I love shit like that. It's so fucking clever and throwaway, but yet somebody had to animate it, pitch it, you know what I mean? It had to go through a vetting process, so it's in there for a reason, and that's what I like about the Pixar stuff, too, is that there's no... stone left unturned on any level, you know, not just the visual. And so, which is rare, because a lot of these kids movies, the more I see them, and there can be small pleasures in things like Zootopia and Frozen like that. But like you said, they're just not the same. They're not in the same league.
Well, Zootopia, I still think Zootopia is, you know, a cut above a lot of the kids animation stuff. You know, it definitely is top tier, but there's just like Pixar is just, I don't know. It's like, so far away from everything else, it really is in the league of its own, you know. And even with things that weren't huge hits, I know that Brave wasn't something that a lot of people liked, but there's things in Brave that are just that you won't see in any other animated movies. They try for interesting, really interesting storylines and different plot twists and things that you won't see.
I think WALL-E is highly overrated, and it's one of my favorite of it. Or I'm sorry, underrated. Sorry.
I was gonna say.
I don't think enough people have seen WALL-E, and I think they should go back and revisit that.
So good, especially considering, you know, no voice for a very long time throughout that movie.
Fantastic film. All right, let's move on and talk about. I want to hear about 13 Hours because I have yet to watch this. We shared that Vudu account. I have not looked at this. It's the Michael Bay war film. Am I missing something? Should I watch it?
A lot of people have joint checking accounts. We have a joint Vudu account.
And we manage it well. I mean, if we divorce, we get half the movies back apiece, so we're good.
It was good. I'll say it was good. It wasn't as good as I was hoping for, but it was pretty damn good.
I mean, is it Black Hawk Down good or Lone Survivor good?
You know, it's a little bit less than both of those. But it's there, you know, where it wants to be there. It's perhaps not as interesting of a story. Nothing touches Black Hawk Down. If you want to talk modern warfare stuff, movie wise, that's kind of the pinnacle still.
Yeah.
And Lone Survivor was very good, but really, I mean, the story of that was like, whoa, you know, it was a little mind blowing. This wasn't as mind blowing, especially, I mean, if you kind of know what happens anyways, it's kind of just something that happens, you know, but this does give you a very good sense of who the American warrior is, you know, who these soldiers are, in a sense of like, that they're tough fucking dudes, you know, like it's definitely a man's movie in that kind of a sense. And I gotta say, I mean, no matter the content, Michael Bay's direction is just always so fucking fun to watch. I mean, the camera, he's constantly has the camera moving in this, and it's just, and some beautiful photography. And it just, I don't know, for everyone that sits around and you know, gets wowed about all these Oscar movies and the shot lasted for 10 minutes and the camera was moving here and there. I mean, fucking, have you not seen a Michael Bay movie?
Hey, you're preaching to the choir here, baby, because I 100% agree with you on this. I always have that Michael Bay is a fantastic filmmaker, and he's been marred in these Transformer movies for a bit too long for my liking. But I want to go back and restate my stance on Pain and Gain, which I was highly disappointed in, but I have watched it numerous times over the year, and I growingly appreciate that film over and over and over. And I am liking the fact that he can do, look, if the world gets another Transformers movie, it's going to happen. If we can get these side projects from him at the same time, fine. That's a fine trade-off to me, because those Transformers movies are going to happen with or without him, and Paramount will bankroll these kind of things because they're giving him billion-dollar hits every time out. And the guy can do a procedural. I mean, The Rock is technically a procedural, and it's fucking filmed. I mean, like you said, everything has that touch where it heightens reality.
Exactly. I mean, you say procedural, which is perfect, because that's really all he does in every single thing. And really, aside from the first Transformers movie, when you watch a Michael Bay action film, it's hard to get lost in the action because the camera moves, but it moves, you know, with purpose. I mean, you're being shown all this stuff. You're being guided through this insane, you know, war, bullets, shit's going everywhere, but you know exactly where you are. You know exactly what you're looking at. You know exactly who's getting killed. There's never a question of like, oh, what just happened? You know, that never happened this entire movie. And it really rarely happens through any of his stuff for me.
So you recommended it?
I do. I would. Just don't, like, you know, don't get your hopes too high on it, because it's really not like, it's not an amazing movie, but it is a very good one.
All right. I got to go into X-Men Apocalypse real quick here with you. I know I'm just catching this a little late in the game. This has been out for a while. It's somewhat underperformed in terms of the box office. We know we have a listener out there that wanted us to talk a little bit about the X-Men and its declining box office, but I think it's kind of a non-story at this point. I will say this for the X-Men Apocalypse movie and for the franchise. It is one of the rare franchises now to be going on for 16 years and to be retaining the same core group of actors. I mean, it's mind-boggling that they rebooted this concurrently while the other ones are still going, while you still have Jackman, you know, and still including those actors, you know?
You're right.
It's kind of strange how this has all worked out.
But don't you think, I mean, a lot of TV does this all the time, right?
But and we know that movies have adopted a lot of things from television, especially the episodic format of movies right now, and everything being a chapter in something. And X-Men Apocalypse is neither the best nor the worst X-Men movie. It's just simply the newest, you know? It's it's here.
Compared to X-Men 3, because that was the whole comparison that I kept reading about.
It's better than X-Men 3, but at the same time, I will say this about X-Men 3. X-Men 3 is a shorter film, which this could easily be shorter by 40 minutes. I'm not playing. X-Men 3 was looked at. I mean, I thought X-Men 3 was a huge come down because I loved X-Men 2. It's one of my favorite superhero films of all time. And I'm not necessarily an X-Men fan, but I thought that movie did great things with his characters and, you know, was doing all the things that superhero movies wanted to do that it wasn't nearly capable of doing yet. I mean, it became a little bit more common after the Nolan Batman movies to do the stuff that X-Men 2 was doing. But regardless, X-Men 3 is flawed. It's got the Brett Ratner kind of, I don't know, loose filmmaking, I shall say.
Yes.
But but at the same time, X-Men Apocalypse is so fucking, it's so dumb. I mean, the villain is the villain has no purpose. It looks like the bad guy from the Power Rangers. Oscar Isaac is buried in there somewhere. It doesn't matter if it was him.
I thought it looked like something from, Prometheus.
Maybe, because he's supposed to be this ancient Egyptian. But the last X-Men movie was pretty darn good. And I thought Peter Dinklage was a decent villain in that for what he was trying to do. But in this, this is slow to start, too. Let me tell you what. This is about 50 minutes until this movie starts going. And then the second and third act move along fairly well. But they recycle bits that they did in the last one, the Quicksilver bit, and the whole thing about families. And you know, Magneto once again flipping sides and flipping back at the right time. And I'm just over it. Really, it looks like X-Men 2 and First Class were the high points of this franchise.
I mean, the Hollywood Reporter recently had a thing where they were saying that the new hurdle for these movies is obviously villains, right? The amount of villains, as if whoever wrote it hasn't seen a fucking superhero movie in the past 20 years. This is something you complain about all the time. A problem here? Too many villains?
No, because it's just the one guy, but he has no purpose. His purpose is to come back and just wipe out.
But he has side villains. Doesn't he have little minion?
No, he just recruits. Not really? You know, he recruits Storm and Psylocke. Yeah, and
there's so many fucking X-Men anyways.
100%. That's why it reminded me of Part 3. Angel, you know, these characters that you see in there. Granted, the special effects are once again much more up to date, and they do a good job here with the introducing Cyclops character. I did appreciate that, and the Jean Grey kind of romance, love triangle, and a nice cameo by Hugh Jackman. And they've somehow worked this all, like I said, this rebooting concurrent trilogy into leading up to what we already know without violating timelines like they did in Terminator. So I'll give them credit. They've done 8 movies now in 16 years, but enough is enough. Let us stop this now. McAvoy, Fassbender, great casting choices.
Yeah.
But, I mean, we've gone. I'm good. It's just literally, it's just the latest X-Men movie. It's like a cartoon century at this point. So, I got to give it 2 stars. It's beautiful looking. I mean, it does everything right. But I mean, honestly, if anybody has watched this movie and is moved by it, Captain America 3 was thrilling.
I was just gonna say, Civil War clearly handled this better.
it was thrilling. I could follow it. But I thought X-Men, outside of a couple of cool special effects sequences. And plus the fucking length of this movie. And I know Captain America is the same length, but it used its time just marginally better. I don't know. Let's move on. In the Heart of the Sea, another Hemsworth debacle, or is it a hit? And nobody knows. What is this?
this movie is dumb.
Dumb as in not to be watched, or is it dumb as in
I would say if you would like to watch a movie like this, watch Master and Commander. Ron Howard teams up yet again with Chris Hemsworth, and he's Chris Hemsworth plays a race car driver trying to drive his ship really fast. No, that's not right.
That's Rush.
He's this is the real story of Moby Dick, kind of, because it's not the real story. It's, you know, wildly overtold and cinematized and blah, blah, nonsense, whatever. I mean, why not make fucking Moby Dick if you're going to do what they did to this story? They left out a lot of things that I thought were very poignant in the actual or in the other tellings of the story, and really just focused on trying to make this into a cinematic, a couple of scenes where the whale is tracking them and trying to kill them and in that kind of sense. And then, as with anything like this, there's a lot to do with them being stranded, and that shit's always boring, man. I mean, how long can you watch someone sit and just wither away on a fucking little rowboat in the ocean?
Yeah.
I mean, the people we need to learn, fucking cut that shit a little shorter because it is boring as fuck, man.
Wow, we have another problem with overlength in a
keep
film.
Keep doing that. Yeah, well, I shouldn't know. With the title, like, In the Heart of the Sea, you kind of know what you're getting into, but it didn't play out the way I thought it was going to play out. And it has a weird 3-act structure to it. Like, I just wouldn't have structured it. You know what? I mean, the problem with this is the same kind of problem that Angelina Jolie movie had. What was that called? Beyond? No, not that Beyond. One. The other one. With the guy who's in the Olympics, you know, and he gets shot down and he fucking gets stuck in the ocean.
Oh, you're talking about Unbroken.
Unbroken. Thank you. Yeah, it has a lot of the same problems that has, where it doesn't fit into a 3-act structure correctly. You know, it just doesn't. And it's very, like, boring for long stretches of time. And then for 5 minutes, it's super exciting. You're like, what's fucking going on? And then it's just boring as shit again.
It wakes you up out of your slumber. And
it's like, what the fuck, you know? Yeah. So, I don't know. It's not really worth watching at all.
Oof, that's a rough review.
Well, it's true. I mean, I think that the amount of people who've seen it kind of proves that, doesn't
it? Well, yeah. Nobody. The ones that did see it weren't too high on it. And this was supposed to be an Oscar contender, and it quickly withered.
There's nothing Oscar, nominating about this, period.
Well, nor is anything to do with the movie that I saw, which was the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Part 2, Out of the Shadows. And I was a big fan of the first one. I mean, I gave it my highest rating. I was pleasantly surprised at that first film.
But Megan Fox is in it.
And I agree. She's in this one, too. And again, she is the best thing in the movie. The turtles here are... It's hard to say the turtles are dumbed down because they're the fucking Ninja Turtles, but this is playing to a much younger audience. It's almost like they've decided to, instead of go after the 30-something and 20-something crowd and the nostalgia factor, they said, hey, we've already got them. Now let's go after
the
kid.
But that happened
market.
With the originals, too. They slowly got dumbed down.
And they had declining box office receipts, just like this is. And I can see why, because this is a decidedly more of a kid's film. It's also, once again, a little bit overlong for what they're trying to do here. I know I'm complaining about that often, but let's not stretch out things when they don't need to be. This movie reintroduces the characters as if we don't know who they are by visual text with a little, you know,
who are they?
About it, and like Ralph, the muscle. And they've now made Raphael like bigger than the rest of the turtles, and from my recollection they all were the exact same size. No, Raphael is like the fucking Dwayne Johnson of the bunch. I mean, and he at one point before he jumps out of
I always thought they were exactly the same size.
You know, what would Vin Diesel do? And there's these really fucking corny jokes. And the first one was littered with little pop cultural references that guys our age would get, you know, a ringing cell phone, a horn honk that played the Turtle Power theme and things like that. None of that exists in this, except for at one point, Donatello has got some gadgets on his wrist and it's a Super Nintendo controller, which...
But they shoot in the trailer, didn't they? They had the van, and weren't they shooting stuff toys and stuff?
Right,
no?
with the hubcaps. All takes place in the first 5 minutes, and then we're left with the story. And the most clever thing about the story is that the Will Arnett character, who was the douchebag cameraman in the first one, is now like the king of the city because he got all the glory for saving
Casey
them.
Jones is in this.
Casey Jones is played by the guy who does the Arrow, and might as well have Jai Courtney in this. He's a non-starter. Casey Jones' character is useless in this. I mean,
damn.
Tyler Perry's running around at one point. It really is just it's not as exciting visually. It's a lesser sequel. What they did here, what they're doing to a lot of movies this summer, is that they went with a lesser known director. And it's a shittier movie. The sequels this year are appallingly bad, save for Finding Dory so far that I've seen.
Really?
I can go through a list of them here, and they've been appallingly bad. Bad year for sequels, including Neighbors 2.
That sucks.
It really does suck. I was disappointed by it. I mean, I wanted to like it.
The guy, I can't say his name, Elias Koteas or whatever.
Right, who did the original Casey Jones.
Casey Jones will always be Casey shit was badass in that fucking first movie and shit. Oh.
You know, the original Turtles movies got slammed by Ebert and Siskel. If you ever go back and rewatch their rant on it, I mean, they're like, we're depressed at kids today. This is their films. And now, like, 30 years later, I feel like I'm doing the same thing going, I feel bad that the kids today got this version of the Turtles 2 and Casey Jones and not the version that we got in the introduction we got, because that character was somewhat threatening but protective and good. And this guy is just I don't know if it's underwritten, poorly directed, or badly acted, or maybe a combination of all three.
I think it is a combination. The most important thing, though, to me is always going to be writing and casting, right? I mean, that's what it always comes down to. You know, even if the direction's bad, I can usually forgive that.
Well, the writing here is subpar. Megan Fox is the only cast member that scores, and
if they don't care, then why should I?
Yeah, that's kind of how I felt in this movie, especially with the brain character and things like that. I mean, they tried.
They got brain in here?
Yeah, but it's not as great as you might think it would be.
Oh, really?
Well, if you get to the brain, well, you'll just watch this movie and we'll get back to me if you like this one better than the second one. This will be on the Vudu account by tomorrow. All right, I got a streaming online pick of the week. It's Steve McQueen, The Man on the Mons, the documentary Making the Lawns. I just got that recently and I've never watched it. I'm going to bust it out after watching this documentary. Pretty good documentary, available on Showtime anytime. Give it a look. Looks like McQueen was quite a prick.
Well, he did steal, what's her name from Evans, you know.
Well, even before that, it looked like he was quite a prick. or just drunk all the time and still quite a prick. It's what, you know, you hear about like how bad boy these actors were and this, that, and the other. And you just think like, if it was today's thing, like that shit would just not go over. You're not running a set like that.
It doesn't do it. Well, and really, when you think about nowadays, the people who become ultra famous or whatever are usually the complete opposite.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Yeah, like the people
unless
like
they're,
that
unless they're Kanye West, right, or have something to do with Kardashians.
No, but if you look at like the Lindsay Lohans or people like that have become destructive on film sets, they kind of ostracize them. And McQueen had clout and used it.
But when you look at someone like Channing Tatum or anyone like that, like somehow they magically kind of rise through the ranks, you know?
Yeah, they get anointed somehow, and they're not going to lose their chance by being a dick. Creatively, right, yeah. It's all their collaborators. Yeah, but check out the documentary. Interesting. It's the trailer.
Maybe that's why all the Hemsworths are coming up.
Oh, God.
Trailers can be wondrous things, giving us insight into the unseen movies of the future. But when they're bad, fire photon torpedoes. Shields up, red alert. Prepare for Trailer Addict.
I'd fire photon torpedoes, but I think Sully would still land his plane.
That Sully trailer. Let's get to it right off the bat. We got Tom Hanks and Clint Eastwood doing their best to hit Oscar glory.
Boy, is this over-dramatized or what?
Fuck no. I loved every second of this
good
thing.
Good Lord.
I can't wait for this. I think Oscar's all around. Oscar's all around here, sir.
Oh, my God. Well, first, I've already seen this. It had a black guy in it when I saw it.
Yeah, but that movie got sidetracked into alcoholism and a lot of weird shit.
And this doesn't look like it's not going to do that?
That's one question. Let me tell you something.
It
kind of
seems like the same movie to me. That's why I'm a little worried about it. I don't know. Because Flight, that's exactly what Flight did, and I wish it hadn't.
The real Sully Sullenberg, I live in the same town as he. I grew up in the same town that he lives in. Before the whole debacle, he came into the bar I worked at. After he came into the bar that I worked at, he didn't take a fucking drink from anybody before or after who would try to buy him one, particularly after when they found out what he had done and there was a big parade in town and the whole nine. The guy does not drink. That is a thrown-in fucking bit that is just for the advertising materials.
Really? Does he jog as well? I mean, there's so much about this movie. Oh, please. They try to act like this is some sort of like he's gearing up for this event or all this shit's happening. Oh God, it's over dramatized. You know why? I didn't think it was emotional at all. It's over dramatized. It's not real. It's not real. It's too.
It's the most real.
It's fake.
Actually, it happened.
Yeah, I know it happened. Not this way though. This didn't happen. You know, I'd like to see the real shit. I don't want to see the Lifetime version of it.
I think Hanks maybe that's just perfectly cast as this. He looks in. The whole thing is spot on as far as I'm. And I think Eastwood is the right director to come in and not make a fucking 3-hour puff piece here, but give us, a lean, tight something that we're going to have here. And I think Flight could have been this movie, and Flight was entrancing for that first 30 or 40 minutes and then got so sidetracked and became something, a character study about a character who wasn't worth studying that I couldn't hold it in the regard that everybody did. And this, looks like it stays on point. For what the story is trying to tell.
I guess. No, I mean, no.
We're leagues apart on this one. Leagues apart on that one.
I just don't really care about this whole Sully shit that everyone makes a big deal about.
He's an American.
I really don't. He's not an American anything.
Yes, he is.
He's
Ouija 2. Let's move
Canadian.
On. Let's talk about Ouija 2. I'm surprised that I like this trailer as much as I did.
Yeah, why does this look like more of a movie than the first one?
Because this is really a haunted child movie. This has nothing really to do with Ouija. I mean, the first Ouija was about the board. This is more of like a demonic presence, and I'm digging the crazy fucking ginger.
I guess didn't expect anything from this, especially with the Ouija 2. By the way, this is like one of the only movies that actually use a number for a sequel and not like a colon, something else out there.
Out of
not
the
a
shadows,
number.
Into
yeah.
The darkness.
Because they're prepared to, release 8 more afterwards. So that's kind of cool, I guess, maybe.
Refreshing, yeah.
Although there's something written underneath it on this poster, so that might not be totally true. But anyhow, yeah, I just thought this was going to be a piece of shit thing. And then it turned out to be kind of a real movie, and that just surprised me. So maybe I'm sure it'll still be a piece of shit, but
yeah. But
they sold me a little bit on the trailer.
The first one made $100 million on like a $10 million budget, and that's why we're getting a sequel. And this one looks like the better film, although it looks like it's down the Annabelle road.
No one will hate it.
Yeah. That's fine.
That's usually how it works.
It's designed to win a weekend in Halloween. That's probably what it'll do.
Yeah, whatever.
All right, let's talk about two sequels, both that aren't coming with the number two, with the semicolon. We have Jack Reacher.
Well, they're coming with the number two, all right.
Never Go Back. And
which Jack one? Reacher, which one do you want to do?
Jack Reacher 2 here is he's a damn good trailer. I like this thing. It tells a small story on its own. And it bothers me because that's probably the first 10 minutes of the movie that they're giving away. But it is what it is, and it kind of hooks you. And I'm liking this Jack Reacher character more and more, I think. I'm liking this universe. I think I want to return here. So what'd you think?
Yeah, I liked it. I'm ready to watch more Jack Reacher. My only worry is that he seems to be a little douchier this time around. And I worry that we're, getting a little bit of that Tom Cruise douchiness in there.
Maybe a little Ethan Hunt slipping in there?
A little bit too much, yeah. Like a little Mission Impossible 4, a tad bit. Like Jack Reacher thinks he's a little bit too cool for school in this.
Yeah.
Kind of, a couple times. I was like, I don't know. That kind of stuff when it happened in the first one was just so smooth, So I don't know. This one, he seems to be calling it out a little bit more.
The trailer still looks like an effective thrill ride here in a nice older franchise for him to segue into as maybe
it's for old people. It's for us old people, clearly.
Well, yeah, I mean, there's no one in their young 20s that's gonna be, I want to go see Jack Reacher. It's for people that grew up.
Yeah, I definitely am excited to see this, and it does look. I'm glad to see a plot that's like, it's just like shit that's happening to people. It's not like there's no robots. There's no sci-fi.
Yeah, it's no end of the world mechanics.
You know what I mean? Yeah, it's just Jack Reacher. He's got some shits going down, and he's got to take care of it. And I like that, it's a simple plot thing, much like the mechanic Resurrection.
Yeah, another which again that we very about
simplistic plot, right? They take his woman Jessica Alba, which who wouldn't go after her?
Who wouldn't be forced to kill people because they took Jessica Alba?
I would.
The fact that we're bringing back the Jessica Alba as the hot wife girlfriend that's being the damsel in distress is now. We've reverted. We've gone full circle in 10 years. We're back at the Alba factor. I think next Jessica Biel makes a comeback and then a couple others. But this trailer is cut like shit. And Lionsgate,
should
fire their fucking marketing department because to make
it's
sense
so bad.
Heads or tails of the Mechanic Resurrection trailer, you have to almost watch it twice. And it looks like there's some
but
good elements in here.
But I still want to see it because, first of all, Jason Statham, and second of all, Jessica Alba. And then you throw in a little Tommy Lee Jones. And it's like, yeah, all right, I got to, see it.
It's the first Mechanic I thought was one of the high points of the Statham output.
Really? I didn't like it at all, but
I know you didn't, but I really, really liked it. But I liked the original Charles Bronson one too. And to make a sequel to a remake is interesting enough. And then to do it in this I like the fact that they waited a little bit. I think they shot this in 2014 and now they've waited and the Statham output has dropped to a point where it doesn't just seem like another movie that kind of interchangeable. It maybe feels like, okay, I'm ready again for some low-key fun, especially after that Hardcore Henry, which I'll talk to you about next show. I don't want to get in because I haven't finished it yet here. But that to me seemed like, in a sense, like Crank and these kind of oddly concept action films. Sure. And I was watching it and thinking, even watching this trailer going, man, we really don't have action movies anymore. They're just superheroes.
This is the closest you're going to get. But even in this one, he's doing things that are like, he may as well be an action hero.
Fine, but it's not. But he doesn't have a cape on. He doesn't have some sort of, he's not super powered and endowed.
What do you mean, fine? They didn't used to do this kind of shit, when we were kids. This is definitely, you can see the influence, the sphere of influence of the fucking superhero, right? On everything known to man.
I think that when we look back on this decade, we're going to just think, what the fuck were we all thinking watching this many? It is. It's at a point now of just, it's overload for me. It really is.
Yeah.
And I've seen most of them now, and it's just...
It just makes me love other movies that aren't superhero movies all the more. So it has another effect, at least.
It just saddens me, though, when things like Tarzan are given the superhero treatment. It's almost like we're in that era where everything rebooted is now given a superhero.
Well, that's the over-dramatization I'm talking about. That's the same thing I see with the Sully stuff, is it's too... you're so worried about making something that's so cinematic that it just loses any sense of realism. I mean, there's just no fucking realism in movies today, anywhere, right? Unless it's an indie movie with just two people talking and a fucking camera. And it's fine. I love it every once in a while. but I don't love that everything's like that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like, fuck.
You sound like the beginning of Swordfish. Realism. That's what the movie's lack. That's why you held that fucking Travolta.
Yeah.
All right. Last trailer for tonight's show is Pete's Dragon, the forthcoming Disney
totally real.
Live action redo. And I was surprised because I liked the Jungle Book quite a bit. And I think these action remakes are our Disney specialties, but I'm not into this one. I'm really not.
It's for children.
I was watching this. I thought of Mighty Joe Young. Remember that one?
Mighty Joe Young. I actually liked Mighty Joe Long, but Baby, I would say.
Baby.
Yeah, which is the Brontosaurus. You know, the Brontosaurus.
The Brontosaurus movie, the guy from House.
Yeah.
William Cat, man. Oh my God. The legend lives.
But it reminded me a lot of that, especially a couple of the Bryce Dallas Howard scenes in this trailer. I felt like this kind of has some babyish moments in it. But I don't know. I mean, Right. I mean, that's why you cast Howard and then like Carl Urban and stuff and Robert Redford and stuff in this for the adults. And then the rest of the story is actually for the kids. Right.
But this looked like one of the weaker Disney films, like Flight of the Navigator and some harsh like shit
Flight
like
the
that.
Navigator.
Hey, did you hear that kid just got arrested? The kid, the guy's older than
really?
I am now. Got arrested
obviously.
For armed robbery the other day.
Wow.
Yeah, that's what I said. I said, man,
that's
times
interesting.
Are fucking tough.
Yeah, man.
I mean, not everybody's a Macaulay Culkin.
Hmm.
I guess that Disney 401k didn't pay off too well.
That was a fun one. But yeah, you're right. I mean, it is a lot like that, but it's definitely just for kids. You know, this is something that, you know, you'd have on VHS and, you know, back in the day, you'd be able to pop it in the VCR for the kids and it entertained them for however long. Right. And you could watch it every once in a while because it had, faces that you recognize, right? Like Robert Redford, Carl Urban, Bryce Dallas Howard. Right. Not necessarily because of any good performance, but that's the whole point of these, right?
It's great they got Judge Dredd in this thing. I mean, what the fuck? They really skipped out on that role. They're like, we shot our load on the budget here on Redford and Chastain or Howard. Is that Jessica Chastain or is that Bryce Dallas Howard?
It's Howard.
Well, they're interchangeable.
But they are the same person. Yeah, I'm fairly certain.
I'm pretty sure that from scene to scene, they could like twins taking like the same class, you know? They could like jump in for a scene. But,
That's lovely. They're both redheads, so that's usually as far as I go.
That's ginger discrimination, asshole. Well, that's going to wrap up our show today on some discrimination with the Finding Dory theme here in redheaded people. One of my best friends is redheaded, so doesn't everybody say that, though? Okay, so we're going to finish up. Blah, blah, blah. If you've made it this far with us, I want to thank you. I really
do. You got to check the pubes to be sure.
I don't even know. Yes, wait, what if they're hardwood floors? I don't even know how long we've been on the air because my counter stopped working at 30 seconds in. So I don't even know.
We're an hour. We're good.
We're an
done.
Hour, sir. All right. Wrapping things up, I want to thank you all for joining us. Go to the Movie Mavericks YouTube channel and check out some podcasts that we've done, 301, 302, and 303 of the Movie Mavericks podcast are now being done as videos as well, run by Fernando Ramirez, who's editing them together. I want to thank you, Fernando, for doing that. Also on the bottom of this page, when you go to this On the Movie Mavericks page. I want to thank you guys for joining us. Speaking for Trevor Anderson, I'm Jason Rugard, and we are the Movie Mavericks.
Oh my, another magnificent episode has come to an end. If you're craving more, set your destination to moviemavericks.com, warp 9. Engage!